win this game. Skol Vikings, honor your name. Go get that first down, then get a touchdown. Rock 'em, sock 'em, fight, 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 fight. Go Vikings, run up the score. You'll hear us.
We like to make our guests feel comfortable. I think there's no better way to do that than to have that coming out of the break. Darren McFarland, Willie Tonic here at Bridgestone Arena. Yeah, there we go. Let's head up to Minneapolis.
I'll tell you what else we need to do before the show is over, or maybe at the end of the segment here. Paul Allen's call. We've had Paul on, their play-by-play guy, before. He is emotional. Mm-hmm. His call of the last play, it's just total chaos. You know, the crowd's going crazy. Yep. Nobody can believe it. I mean, it's a great call. We need to play that later. So maybe Paul Allen's call of the Diggs catch.
Well, you understand that being in the booth when you don't expect
something
to happen, and then you've got to break out into a very, very unexpected call, and that's what you'll get. Yeah, we'll play that a little bit later. AJ Mansour, K-Fan up in Minneapolis, joins us. AJ, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, and let me tell you what. If you think that the call was good, there's a video of that as well that surfaced shortly after the game. We have it up on our website, kfan.com. Seeing his reaction, and you can look through his booth into the booth behind him is the Vikings coach's booth, and watching him lose his mind, watching the coaches lose their mind, understandably, is kind of a cool scene as well. But I'm doing really well. Thank you guys for having me. Exciting times up here in Minnesota, like you guys were saying.
Yeah, we obviously had our miracle. I noticed we've had a spawn of the Music City Miracle. I heard a lot of people calling it the Minneapolis Miracle. We had our version 20 years ago, so we remember it well, and we were in attendance. What was it like? Because I think the same thing. It was just, in fact, I was doing at the time a live call-in to then Sporting News Radio to basically report that the Bills had come in and done what no team had done in their brand new home, and that's hand the Titans a loss. They hadn't lost at home to that point after the field goal, and literally the play happened as I was on, and I broke out into a legal play-by-play on nationally syndicated radio. But it was just – it was hard. It took a while just for it to sink in, like, oh, my gosh, that just happened. What was it like up there?
Well, it was the same way. I mean, we were in the press box, and, you know, press box is you're supposed to behave yourself and sit in your seat, and there's no cheering, and all those rules got thrown out the window when something like that happened. You know, there's a history up here in Minnesota, especially with the Minnesota Vikings, that – things like this can happen to us, but we're usually on the receiving end, the other end, where the Saints kick a field goal. Brett Favre throws an interception right at the end of the game. Blair Walsh misses a field goal. Gary Anderson in 1998 misses a field goal, the only one he missed all season long, and he misses one in the NFC Championship game. The Vikings are usually on the other end of this. So there was just this feeling that Drew Brees and the Saints had come into our home, and it's all happening again. We were up 17-0 at the half, and they gave that lead away. We regained it temporarily at the end of the game, and then the Saints went down, and Will Lutz kicked a field goal to give them a one-point lead. Everybody was down, and in the matter of 10 seconds, a miracle happened, like you said, and it the place went nuts. There's another video that I'm sure, you know, everyone's seen all these videos that are being shared. It's a sideline cam from the Minnesota Vikings Entertainment Network. That there's no play-by-play. All it is the audio inside the stadium. And you hear when Stephon Diggs catches that football, which effectively put them in field goal range, where if he would have gone out of bounds, if he would have been, you know, forced out of bounds, whatever, they could have kicked the field goal 50 yards or so to win that game. Everybody went bonkers. And then when they realized that there was nobody there to tackle him and he was breaking for the end zone, the loudest noise I've ever heard in my life got even louder, and the place just – it was pandemonium. Nobody knew what to do. The players were at a loss for words. The fans were falling over in the stands. Paul Allen was – and this is not a joke – was literally pushing fans out of his press box. They were trying to climb up in and celebrate with the Vox to celebrate the victory because everyone was just going bonkers. So it was crazy.
I want to – we're going to hit you with a bunch of stuff. So we'll come back, I'm sure. But I do want to hit you with this, AJ, because we're trying to get a feel as the Titans made it. Obviously, it changed the course of our show on Monday morning when the announcement came out about 45 minutes to an hour before our show. And we went wall to wall for 4 hours about the Titans parting ways with Mike Mularkey. And so now the interviewing process is going on and everybody's trying to figure out, you know, where this is headed, what the feel is going to be. And I've kind of cautioned everybody. I think we get caught up in this, you know, one example, Sean McVay, and now everybody needs to hire a 31-year-old head coach, which I think is absolutely ludicrous. As I pointed out all week, Mike Zimmer, he's not exactly a spring chicken. I believe he's in his 60s. Doug Marrone is not some young, up-and-coming coach. Bill Belichick, nothing needed to be said there. What was the feeling in Minneapolis when they hired Mike Zimmer? What were you guys talking about? Today it's easy. I know what the storyline is today. But back when they hired him in 2014, what were you guys discussing?
Well, you know, I think people were excited for the hire. It's kind of the way that coaching in football goes. You have a hard-nosed, you know, yell at the players kind of a coach. That doesn't work out, and the next coach is a quiet, serene guy who's going to be the player's friend, but he earns their respect along the way. That was Leslie Frazier, and then when he got fired, Mike Zimmer came in, and we Googled him real quick to learn as much as we can, and you pull up videos from the Cincinnati Bengals and Hard Knocks, and you see Zimmer cussing out his players in the huddle, and that was the hard-nosed guy. So I think people thought that it was going to come in, and he was going to change the locker room. What I don't think people thought or knew about him at the time is that in changing that locker room, it wasn't a disciplinarian kind of a approach. It was more of a respect approach that he got from the players here in Minnesota, where they bought in 100% that first season. They bought into what he was selling, and it wasn't because he was the coach. It was because they believed in it. They believed in who he was. He invested in them on a personal level, but also on a coaching level on the football field. And in that very first year, you bring in a couple different players, X-Factors like Anthony Barr. You sign Everson Griffin to a new deal. That's now the cornerstones of this defense that he's established here. Now you have a couple more drafts under your belt, some free agent classes to bring people in. And you're reaping the benefits of his defensive mastermind that we saw a little bit of in Cincinnati. We saw flashes of last year before the Vikings wet the bed after the bye week and missed the playoffs after starting 5-0. But this year, it's all paying off, and there's no problems in the locker room. Obviously, when you're in the NFC Championship, everybody's happy. But at the same time, I think people see a legacy coach in Mike Zimmer now. And you mentioned he's an older guy. He learned a lot along the way, had some interviews along the way, and maybe because of his personality, wasn't getting those jobs. He was kind of a rash personality and might not have been getting those jobs, but it was the right fit here in Minnesota. And obviously, people, the fans, the people in the organization, and the players all love him.
AJ Mansour on the line with us, KFAN in Minneapolis. So we also have Tim Hasselbeck, who lives here in Nashville, join us every Wednesday for a couple of segments. And yesterday on the show, talking about some of these candidates, it was interesting. He brought up a name that nobody else has brought up to us that said, you know, because offense is going to be key. It's kind of what got Mike Mularkey in trouble and his staff and, you know, the growth or lack of with Marcus Mariota. Tim was pretty adamant about bringing in a guy like a Brad Childress, who's out there doing
as an offensive,
just
guru,
as a
not the head coach,
right,
but a guy you could bring in,
a consultant, kind of like Tom Moore did that here with Mike Munchak and his staff. Like kind of a consultant, a guy behind the scenes, a guru that can help everybody out. A guy's been in the league for a long time. He was pretty adamant about Brad Childress. Obviously, he was the coach there. I don't know how much you were around Brad Childress. What do you think when you hear that?
Well, here's what I think of when I think Brad Childress. I'm a firm believer that you certainly can teach an old dog new tricks. What got Brad in trouble here in Minnesota when he was the head coach and had a firm hand in the offensive game plan, being a mastermind with that Philadelphia offense, he came here with that rapport. What he didn't do, or what he did do, he tried to make his offense work with the players here. He didn't necessarily adapt his offense to the players that he had on the roster. And I think that's where he got in trouble. When he came here, Tavares Jackson was the quarterback for this team. So you're limited at maybe your most important position. And he didn't change anything. He still ran the offense as if Donovan McNabb was running it. And it just wasn't working. So hopefully he has learned from that. And if he does get another opportunity, he is adopting the mindset that you need to adapt your offense to the players that you have. And that really is what the difference here in Minnesota was between Norv Turner last year when he walked away from this team and when Pat Shurmur ended up taking over last year and then this year had a phenomenal year and will probably end up getting a head coaching job. Pat came in and he adapted the offense to the players on the field. Sam Bradford last year, Case Keenum this year, dealing with injuries, dealing with adaptation through the season. They lost Adrian Peterson last year. They lost Dalvin Cook this year. So 2 years in a row, you lose your starting quarterback and your starting running back in the same season, and you still find success. That's part of his success there, and that, I think, is part of the detriment with Childress. So if he can get over that and he can really adapt to the players that are on that roster, because I think there is some talent there. Obviously, there's some talent there. I think that he can have an impact in a positive direction, but he just needs to stop being so stubborn and learn the new way of the NFL.
AJ, it is interesting to hear you talk about how the storyline changed. I'm sure you spent the entire preseason talking about Sam Bradford and Dalvin Cook, because I know we were here when we were talking about the Vikings, and then suddenly you have Case Keenum and you have the other running backs who have done a fantastic job in Murray and McKinnon there. But in your mind, when you watched it all come down, how did they do it? How were they able to adjust when you have major injury issues like that?
Well, you know, I think it starts with the personnel depth that they developed through the offseason. You know, when it first started we went to free agency first, and they went out and got Latavius Murray as a running back, thought he was going to be the starter, and then shortly thereafter, Dalvin Cook is drafted. And everyone's kind of like, what's going on here? We just brought in a new running back. We did this, we did that. Dalvin ends up being the starter, phenomenal talent. Week four, tears his ACL, and he's out. McKinnon was still on the roster, and Murray was still getting over an injury, so there was a little adjustment period there. But having depth there, bringing in Case Keenum, last year it was Sean Hill. If Sean Hill would not have been able to step in for Sam Bradford this year and fill in the way that Case Keenum has, there would have been a severe drop-off. So it starts with the general manager bringing in the right personnel that, again, fit into what is happening here, because for backups, you need to fit them into what's going on more so. And then with the starter then, you know, you have Sam Bradford in the picture from last year, and Sam had a great game. That first game, week one against New Orleans, was the best game of his career. And everyone thought that everything was going to be great with Sam Bradford. You need to get him an extension and keep him here in Minnesota long-term. And little did we know, behind the scenes, his knee was falling apart, and he didn't come back until this last week, where he served as a backup for the first time. So you have that there. But I just think that, you know, they were able to adapt the offense so that Case Keenum didn't have to come in and do exactly what Sam did in that first weekend. He was able to grow into it, and in that, the players learn what Keenum does differently. Keenum learns what the wide receivers do differently. And one of the things that Keenum does so well is let's call it a slight scramble. It's not like he's going to run the football like Cam Newton kind of a thing, but it's more like Ben Roethlisberger, small area quickness where you can get avoid the first pressure tackle sack in the backfield and extend a play and open it up for a guy like Adam Thielen to break off a route and come back to you to get a big gain. That's where they found their success, and that's one of the things that Keenum has brought to the table that Bradford just didn't have.
Where did they find Thielen? The more you hear about it, I hear it's a very interesting story. I've only heard the story quickly between plays, that sort of thing. But you probably could give us a little bit more detail on him, because what a heck of a player and what a find.
Yeah, I mean, diamond in the rough. And fortunately for the Vikings, it was right here in their own backyard. Adam Thielen is from northern Minnesota, Detroit Lakes. He played Division II football. It was the only offer he got at Minnesota State, Mankato, South Minnesota. And was not drafted. He was brought into the rookie mini camp, which is the first weekend of off-season programming, where they simply need to bring in some local football players so they have enough people to run the drills with the new rookies that just got drafted. So he comes into rookie mini camp. This is probably his last shot at football, and he impresses enough to have them sign him to the practice squad, where he was firmly supplanted for a couple years, ends up making the 53-man roster, where he was inactive for a while. And then last year, he really splashed. You know, it's just a true testament to a guy who works hard at his craft. He's fast. He's physically talented, but for whatever reason, he was overlooked. He dominated Division II. They won some national championships with Minnesota State. But at the same time, he got overlooked, and he took to training. He's a precision route runner, and that's really one of his skills. On top of being physically talented, he will be precise, and he'll run the right routes and set up that DB to a point where he's the only one that can burn them and take them there and set them up and then make that double move and go. And it really is Obviously, he developed into one of the top five wide receivers in the league this year. Nobody can say that they saw that coming. But it's a testament to his hard work, to the research of this team, to just pay attention to the guys in the local community. You know, Minnesota is not necessarily known as a football hotbed, but they had their pulse on the local teams, the local colleges here, and he splashed on their radar enough to get noticed and made the best of it once he got to the NFL.
We had a theme bringing you into the show. We'll have a theme wrapping this up. Let's go on and hear the call.
Big mistake. You just got to be able to – you got to take advantage of it when they do that kind of stuff.
10 seconds to go. 24-23 Saints. Vikings at their own 39. It's third down. Three receivers right, Thielen left. Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs.
Stay
on. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
30.
No.
10.
Touchdown.
Are you kidding me? It's a Minneapolis miracle. Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle.
I can't believe what I just saw, Paul. What an unbelievable play.
Fans at U.S. Bank Stadium are embracing each other. They're trying to climb into the box to hug us all. Nobody can find Stephon Diggs. He ran into the tunnel. Unbelievable, boss.
They went
Are
from
you
zero
me?
To ten in a hurry.
Yeah, there was like this.
It was
so
very
quiet.
Calm and
it's
somber.
Third down. It's the 39-yard line.
Feeling to the right.
That was great.
Probably never gets old hearing that, AJ.
It doesn't. We discovered the Portuguese play-by-play this morning, and it's just as good. You know, you're finding every angle. We're going to live this as long as we can.
Hey, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate the time.
AJ Mansour, K-Fan up in Minneapolis. Appreciate him joining us. Back to wrap up the third hour next.